CVM Stories is produced by Exacaster.
The first time I heard it, it's like, wow, it's like a movie Her. So the way generative AI is different from other forms is that first time it's able to produce something new. Because something like adopting new technologies is being open to experience, right? So let's see how it goes. Worrying about general artificial intelligence is same as worrying about overpopulation in Mars. And applications is the place where majority of value creation can happen. For companies, it's a decision whether they need to buy it or to build it, right?
Welcome to CVM Stories, the podcast on customer value management. Together, we explore how companies can be more successful and the customers happier through the use of latest customer value management techniques. Learn key commercial and analytical insights from telecoms, retail, finance, and other industries that drive CVM forward.
Hi, I'm your host, Egidius. Today, our guest is Rokas Narkus. Rokas is a super early Gen AI adopter and uses this technology everywhere in his daily work, in his life, and helps our clients to adopt it in customer value management. Today, he will share his thoughts, experience, and ideas how to use Gen AI technology now. So, let's dive in.
Subscribe to the podcast or sign up for an email newsletter at exacaster.com/CVM stories.
So, hi, Rokas. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, hi, Gideon. So, thanks for having me.
So, Rokas is my colleague here at Exacaster, and he's also one of the earliest and craziest adopters of Gen AI at Exacaster. So, today I'm really pleased to have you here and to have the discussion about this topic. But before we start, could you do a brief introduction about yourself? What do you do, etc.?
Sure. So as you already mentioned, so for full disclaimer, I work as a client value manager here at Exacaster. So I see my role as being the person kind of in the middle and trying to really drive the value for the customer and to really align us as a company towards our customers. So previously I worked as more like in consultancy. So I have a consulting background. And I think it's a good mesh because I first consult the clients what needs to be done, especially at adopting a lot of new technologies, how to handle data, how to apply AI, ML techniques, etc. And then you promise something, but then you still need to deliver as a company. So in that case, I work to translate how we can actually merge those solutions in the context of our clients. And that's the primary thing I do. And yeah, as mentioned before, I worked a lot in consulting, although I am kind of economist by training and studied multiple European universities.
Okay, so you have this kind of mixed background, meaning like you are really close to the business. Yes, and you also have this mathematical background. So what was your story behind, you know, all this kind of interest in machine learning, artificial intelligence? Where did it start?
Right. So as you mentioned, I do have experience. I worked as an analyst, consulting, leading the teams in analytics, like doing the application myself and for teams, and then now working, across the teams to help to drive the value. And when talking about Gen AI specifically, so I would be lying that, I mean, I was learning Gen AI like 10 years ago. However, obviously, I joined this bandwagon when it started, and I think it kicked off in 2022, November, December, when OpenAI has released ChatGPT. It was like an interface to their most powerful language model, which was GPT 3.5 at the time. And it really showed some of the capacity for, algorithms to build meaning, to build language, right? So that was fascinating. However, my personal interest in more like AI fields or like technology, I think it goes like way back, right? So like 20, 25 years back, I was like a teenager. It was my first time I got a personal computer. It's first time we are connected to internet. It's first time I'm playing video games. And one of the video games I was playing and it captivated my attention was StarCraft. So it's a real-time strategy game where you build your base and you build your army and you try to conquer your opponent. And back then when I was playing, I knew that my opponent was a human being, right? Bots were available. They were not that good. However, fast forward like 10 to 15 years, there's like AlphaZero, which is based on reinforcement learning and deep learning. It basically learns itself through playing games against itself. And it learned so fast. Now it crushes like best StarCraft players. It made shockwaves then, like that such, let's say, algorithm or approach is able to learn what previously was deemed only humans are possible, right? So it beat chess, it beat Go, it beat StarCraft. So for me, it was slightly personal just because I was so much in StarCraft in my earlier days. So this happened around 2015, right? So I was definitely certain that I want to do something with AI. So that's part of the reasons why I also joined Exacaster later on, because we're working towards that direction. But even then, AI and AI applications were quite limited, right? So we're basically talking what in the field is called narrow artificial intelligence. So it's basically able to solve closed systems, right? So if you know the rules, AI can make fewer mistakes than humans can. And now we're actually like at those, like one of the phrases maybe I want to share is like, so Andrew Ng said like, okay, worrying about general artificial intelligence is same as worrying about overpopulation in Mars. So like problem might exist, but it's like some place into the future. And when Sam Altman, which is like CEO of OpenAI, said, okay, we want to build a general artificial intelligence, he was met with skepticism. But I think nobody's really laughing now when like GPT-4 is introduced, when a lot of innovations have happened in the last year. So I guess we'll share and talk about it today. But now the interest is captivated by general public. However, like the journey towards AI and the journey that will continue, not only with generative AI, but the general AI will continue. And I think the developments are really extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. I really loved the part which captured your attention, you know, towards AI. Like it, and it's super random, you know, playing games and the kind of learning through your personal experience that AI can beat your, you in your own game, you know.
Yeah,
it's really cool that kind of we touch the AI from very different perspectives. It's not only pure business, you know. It's touching our personal lives.
Yeah. So like in general, talking about games, so it is first and foremost about games. I think something is about human nature where we are looking at the playtime as our primary way to bond. And even the AI systems were first and foremost about not identifying who churns, right? Or how to upsell a customer. But it is about play. So some of the bigger ones were like Deep Blue by IBM to work at chess, right? And man versus machine, like Garry Kasparov against Deep Blue. So all of that is part of the history, and all of that is what the companies were actually focusing on, right? So I think sometimes it's the role of something like consultant business to try to take the innovations that happen and then apply to like a more like business setting. Although inherently what really drew attention was actually games. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a really interesting part. And it's like really important that the technology would be also inspiring behind the, all the kind of value that it generates. Yeah. So as we know, kind of Gen AI made some, huge leap forward, but how would you define that leap forward from where we were before, like, you know, kind of doing some predictions with machine learning algorithms? It was well known for many, many years. How would you say it is different from that period?
So let's maybe do some definitions. I guess it's easier for the audience as well. So we're talking about generative artificial intelligence. So firstly, artificial intelligence is a capacity, knowledge, capability by a machine to do something. And the way it kind of learns to do it is, let's say, through machine learning and different techniques there. So the way generative AI is different from other forms is that first time it's able to produce something new. So previously it was more about learning the patterns and having answers to your data. It's not about creating something unique or new, which previously has not been seen. So in terms of generative AI, it is able to produce different forms of, let's say, content. So it can produce texts, it can produce audio, it can produce pictures, it can produce videos. So this is, let's say, key aspect how it is different. Just for the interest, maybe like the other forms, the more traditional forms would be like supervised learning, which would be from the label data, you would be able to say whether this is that or not. Say if the customer will churn or he will not churn, whether there is a picture, there's a Kit Kat or not. So those are typically like classification problems that are possible to solve. Then there's like unsupervised learning. So you don't have specific labels. That's a very typical with customer data, right? You don't want to label prematurely the customer. And what happens, you use clustering techniques in order to find different segments. And then based on that, you can target them differently, right? So that's also a very popular technique. And lastly, what has been also re-emerging, and one example was this AlphaZero, right, which has managed to learn and play itself, right? So this like reinforcement learning. So it's like from multiple interactions, when you have a function which you want to optimize for, you continue to generate different samples or interactions. And based on that, you're able to produce better results. Sometimes it's used in pricing, sometimes it's used in games, right? So, but all of them are more about finding the answers in existing data in order to say about it, not to produce something unique. And then in terms of generative AI, I think, let's say, key concepts are firstly, the foundational models, right? So before you had ML models, and that's an acronym, but the foundational model is let's say based on multiple sources of data and different inputs, a model can be built so that he later on produces certain things. So let's say DALL-E 3 or Midjourney is such a foundational model which can create pictures. GPT 3.5 or Llama 2 is a foundational model that can produce text. Actually, these foundational models and produce text are called like large language models, right? LLMs. And these are, let's say, like the key buzz, right? I think those have matured the most and are already producing like really extraordinary texts and can be incorporated in different fields. And then especially it's also client-facing, right? In terms of like ChatGPT having backend of GPT-4 and you're able to interact it via text. So yeah, generative AI is creeping into something that was previously exclusive to humans, right? So being creative, being able to produce the text, audio, video, and it keeps advancing, right? So it becomes harder and harder to distinguish. That's how it's different from the other AIs.
Okay, so now we are in a place where we have, let's say, large language models that kind of condensed all human know-how. We can produce whatever text we want. We can produce whatever image we want. We can produce whatever video we want, yeah? And the key question starts to become, so what do we do with that? Because the applications are infinite. It will replace everything, you know? kind of the first thought. But how does it look in reality? For example, you as a very early adopter of the technology, where do you use it in your daily life? So let's start from, let's say, your kind of professional life. Did you adopt it somehow? What would be your tips, tricks, etc.? Where do you use it right now, basically?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I think first and foremost, like what Gen AI can do, I think it basically can do things for you. So meaning instead of you, he can just like write text or replace a certain function, right? Or it can do things with you. So meaning it's like a super intelligent assistant that helps you to do your job better, right? So I think, yeah, McKinsey was doing research and trying to look in the areas where language is used the most and how much of it can be fully automated now. So that falls in the first category. So that's about 10%. However, obviously, when applying on a personal matter, I want to delegate as much as possible. But truly, in the area where I work, let's say full delegation is really not possible, right? It's like mixture of things, interactions with clients, trying to keep up myself with, let's say, technologies, let's say brainstorming different ideas and approaches, right? So I use it more in terms of empowering myself to be more effective at the work that I do. And so I have been early adopter of, let's say, also paid versions of ChatGPT. So let's say this plus version has given access to all the new features and the most powerful language model. I noticed that a lot of discontent with language model comes from not using kind of the latest and greatest, because it's like talking with the junior and talking with the senior. That's probably the difference between the models. So in terms of personal examples, so what I like to do is to basically train the language model, like to build a custom GPT, which serves certain function. So for instance, one of them would be like assistant for email crafting, right?
Okay.
So that, I mean, it's not a very creative name, but that's the name I gave, which basically helps me to craft emails. So to really get the message across, to improve or proofread, right? So it could work both ways. Either I say certain keywords that I want or the message that I want to tell, and then he drafts an email. I look at it, I redraft certain parts, and then share for clarity, right? So if there's any issues for the GPT, there might be issues for our customers to understand as well. And in many cases, we also work in a way where language barrier can be present. So then it's important to tailor your communication to either simplify, to make it clear, etc. So that's say one custom GPT that I would do.
So you have a special assistant which helps you to do your communication with the clients in a certain situations when you need to make sure that kind of you are super precise with your messaging. So because of the language barrier, etc. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can tailor it to really different either personas or target audiences, right? Because you basically need to vary your communication depending on whom you are messaging. Obviously, it's an overkill to use for maybe simple confirmations, etc. However, for something that's more sensitive, I think it would be important to cross-check. Obviously, you don't use it for something really personalized information, right? Just so that you're conscious that you're still, let's say, more like validating certain formulations, right? So I think that's like a good way to actually use, and actually good way to learn as well, because when you have used it for several iterations, then you can see the patterns or and suggestions. Then you can either ask it to change it to the tone that you want, or you can adopt it yourself where you say, okay, this makes sense. Like, you should incorporate in the future emails of my own.
And so, okay. So I would like to touch base on this part a little bit more. So you are talking a lot about nuances and how to write emails, etc. And I bet that you learned a lot beyond the general grammar, yeah? So could you extract some learnings of what did you take out for yourself when actually crafting those emails together with ChatGPT?
I have a separate GPT for more learning or broadening my view about certain topic. Like, it obviously is applicable to the language models and the agents or the custom GPTs that are built there or you build there, is that they need to have a role and be more specific. So, for instance, if it is more about crafting emails, I would probably keep it about crafting emails. And then if I really want to dig deeper and understand a given topic, I would, you know, I would do a custom GPT about that. I would, for instance, if we're talking something like machine learning or machine learning operations or any of the new areas that are emerging, and I think it would be important for us to both keep up and invest in understanding, I would actually create another custom GPT. I would upload a different sort of information there. So let's say books, articles that are relevant to the topic. And then this custom GPT has access in general to the knowledge that he already possesses or is trained. And then he has access to deep knowledge about a given book, right? So then you can really have an intelligent conversation that allows you to learn better. Obviously, like, there is no substitute for you learning or reading itself, but then combining that to cross-validate whether your understanding is correct or, like, making suggestions about it, digging deeper into the topic. So I think that gives you a possibility to learn more about the topic. So I don't expect every GPT to work and know everything. So I actually do specialize them so that they are experts in ML and I can talk with it. And then another is expert in, let's say, how to run, let's say, a meeting so that it has agenda, it has different points, right? So then it's, this is how I would approach GPTs.
So the point which inspires me from what you say, and which is kind of new for me, is like that you basically create multiple assistants which you tailor for specific topics, and then you kind of get the superpowers, you know, from every topic, because you have kind of the best coach, assistant, I don't know, maybe advisor, yeah, how to work in, with a specific context. Could you somehow measure either, let's say, how much do you delegate, or how much productivity do you gain from actually building this ecosystem for yourself?
Yeah, so I think, let's say, we are in a setup where, let's say in my case, like I work for a company, I help this company progress. We might have OKRs or different goals there. However, the way I look at some interactions with, let's say, colleagues, is that in case I onboard in certain topic or in case I delegate, does it A, save my time? So I'm basically can use that time to do other things. Or B, it increases the probability of a success. Mm-hmm. Because in some cases, let's say my colleagues in a different area might be better than me. So maybe that delegation, it's not about only saving my time, but increasing the probability of a success. Obviously, let's say sometimes with the delegation, what happens that initially it's harder to delegate or for the person to accept it because the skill levels are different. However, if he's learning, then over time he's able to pick it up and actually master a given area. So with GPTs, it's similar in a way that, okay, should I use it? And it gives me answers that are reasonable. If he is hallucinating or not hallucinating, can he actually be an asset or limit my understanding, right? So I don't think there is, let's say, fast rules for the KPIs to establish here, but it's more about the interactions and the internal function of productivity and feeling, whether he really ever saves me time or he increases, let's say, success. And success depends on the topic. But if I have more time and I'm able to do, let's say, my job well, or I'm able to really expand my vision about the different technologies and bring that to our clients, then it's a huge success. So that's how I think about the interactions with the GPTs.
You have many tools in, let's say, your professional life where you leverage GPT. Do you have any examples where you also leverage the same tools in your personal life? Could you give one or two examples there?
Sure. I think there are numerous examples, right? Sometimes it's more about exploring these use cases, going deeper. So we may spend a lot of time here. Let me know which are really interesting. But I think one of the topics let's touch upon is learning. So I work as a client family manager, but the region which I work the most is Latin America. So it's different clients, let's say, from Salvador to Colombia to Bolivia. So it's actually quite across the region. Unsurprisingly, they do speak Spanish primarily. And when I joined Exacast there, I had limited or no Spanish language skills. So it's quite tricky when you hear clients talking really a lot in their own language and then answering for you, okay. So there's a lot of context which is lost. So some of the promises of Gen AI is that they would be able to transcribe and translate as it happens in real time. However, the same thing can happen in your head in case you are capable to speak that language. So I have used, ChatGPT in order to learn the Spanish language. Obviously, it's like a supplement, right? Mm-hmm. The most effective It was like when I was learning Spanish in live sessions in Peru. But the second best thing is actually to tailor those interactions with custom GPT. So I would, just say, okay, that's my level. That's the topic. Let's go deeper. And he would be so supportive in terms of like explaining the different issues that I would have or like the mistakes I would make, the examples. And what's more interesting is that they also introduced like voice. Mm-hmm. So it's ability to interact with you, not through text, right? Because it's very dry if you interact through text, but when you speak. So it was able to speak with me. The first time I heard it, it's like, wow. It's like a movie Her, something like that, or we're going there. However, with the languages, it's ability to speak directly and get his inputs, and then you hear the GPT speaking. So at the time, I thought, oh my God, this is like totally a killer for all the learning language apps. But what's interesting is that the way that companies are responding. So for instance, I use Duolingo as well for language learning, or let's say different words. And now, instead of GPT killing Duolingo, because everybody wants like interactive experience in their languages. It's actually Duolingo incorporating in their application GPTs. So that means that behind the scenes, they would have something to customize your language learning. So different scenarios, be that ordering at a restaurant, checking in a hotel, different scenarios that you might have when traveling. And they are following the script, but not all of the interactions are unique. So basically, Duolingo introduces that. Similar to something like Khan Academy, right? So yeah, they are doing Khanmigo, where they are impersonating like Napoleon and then talking as if he was in those battles and able to explain. So ChatGPT gives a glimpse about how you can use for your own purposes. And then some of the companies takes it and puts it to another level, right? And I think that's like the applications that we'll probably talk about. But this is the way I used it for, let's say, language learning, and I use for other purposes as well.
From this learning perspective, I have one random insight, which is like, when you drive a car and use, let's say, I don't know, Google Maps to for navigation, yeah? And when you make a mistake, the navigation system is very, very forgiving. You know, you can make 10 mistakes in a row, and it will still show you the best way to get to your destination. And this, for me, it's also a very similar feeling when you chat, for example, with ChatGPT, with voice, and you learn, try to learn something, and you make 5 mistakes in a row. And this assistant is very forgiving for you. You know, it will repeat 10 times if you are making the same mistake. You don't get this experience even with the best coach, you know, because it kind of the system is very forgiving. It's with you, so it's a kind of very interesting experience. I don't know if you share some of similar insights.
Yeah, for sure. I think that this is definitely one of the benefits of, in general, like AI systems or like machines, is that they can be tailored to your liking. And yeah, they don't get tired. They still are super exciting. It's and you can tailor it the way you want. You can like program as if it's like a dog, super exciting all the time, and still tries to teach you, right? Although, I mean, it will ask you, okay, you did this example already. Do you want to move on, or you want to repeat it, right? So this is already inbuilt in certain language models. However, it definitely gives you like a safe ground, right? To test the different ideas, to try to learn, to fail. I think for a lot of people, it is really being uncomfortable making mistakes or failing, right? And if you do that with other people or when you are surrounded by people, those mistakes are really weighs on you. So I think the best of the best learning experiences is about really eliminating that fear of failure, creating safe environments, etc. So the best experience for me, at least, is still like very live with the best of the people. And Gen AI, it's not a promise that he will replace the best of the best teachers, but he will empower a lot of to be just as good or close to that, to being that good, and empower a lot of people, right, to do that. So it's very hard to find, let's say, online the teacher that you're truly connecting, because then you can't really change their style. But then it would be possible to do that with learning with GPTs, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we touched quite a lot of different examples and aspects. Where does the Gen AI change our lives now? Maybe let's move our focus now towards more customer value management part, because there kind of it is still Wild West, you know? Everybody feels that we can do something there. We should start doing something there. Could you share, let's say, some guidelines? Where do you see the most promising use cases right now?
Sure. So I think first and foremost, maybe let's paint a picture about the different layers that are associated with generative AI, right? And from there, we can talk about, let's say, value chain of customer value management. And from there, how the Gen AI can be plugged into those parts. So first of all, when talking about, let's say, layers of Gen AI, right? So actually, at the very bottom, you have all the infrastructure. So it's guys like Intel, NVIDIA, AWS, etc. So those are playing there, both to have the hardware and to provision that in the right way. So this one won't go away. Like you see NVIDIA stock exploding. It's just because they are able to tailor their hardware for the purposes of actually making AI available. And a lot of hardware innovations will help to introduce local AI systems on your phone or on your PC, right? So that's very powerful. However, that's like billions of capital investment that needs to be made in order to play that game. And few of the companies, it's like complete oligopoly, right? Then you're looking into more like foundational models and frameworks of using them, right? So now it's more players are here. However, we're still talking like millions and millions of dollars in order to really play that game. And, you know, like even Mistral or OpenAI has received like huge evaluations and a lot of rounds of funding. And they have, let's say, strategic partnership with those key cloud providers in order to be able to up-train those foundational models. So it's very costly to train 7 billion or 70 billion or even more, right? What is expected from OpenAI, right, GPTs. And then there's frameworks, but the frameworks, I think, some of the industry practice become to emerge, right? How do you actually build and integrate those different parts? Because you basically need to talk with your data, right, to make it relevant. But then on top of that, it's like apps, right? And applications is the place where majority of value creation can happen. For companies, it's a decision whether they need to buy it or to build it, right? So because here, especially in the area of something like customer value management, I think it's not fully clear and not fully developed yet whether it is better for something like a huge retail shop, say Walmart, to build in-house certain applications, or to actually go ahead and rely on external vendors that would be building that experience and making intelligent customer relationship management systems, for instance. And obviously on top of that layer is like services. And services, the way you can think from the company's internal point of view, it's applying those apps, like making sense from having the right journeys in place, empowering, let's say, your employees with the right prompts, etc. So this is the kind of the value chain that, in general, that we need to think about. Mm-hmm. And I think the focus is like the top two layers. When talking about, let's say, customer value management. So in customer value management, so let's say it's like nothing changes, guys, right? Like it, like you still need to first and foremost provide the value to the customer and try to monetize that. That helps you to be in the business, but the first part is necessary in order for you to make an excellent experience for the customer. So in this value chain, I think it is important to think end-to-end, that you ask the right questions and you reach the right audiences and influence their behavior. Let's see, the way you reach is through certain channels. So I see that innovations are possible actually in all of those fields, right? So it may be firstly about better understanding of the customers. So previously, well, let's say both text-based analysis, like sentiment analysis, and incorporation of, let's say, cookie information, etc., was quite tricky. Now with large language models, this becomes easier to do. Then this can feed either into better understanding the customer or actually making better recommendations, right? Then moving into interactions, right? So interactions, those can be much more customized, right? So one popular one is building AI-powered chatbots so that they are able to handle interactions with the customers. Let's say you log into Zalando, and there's like a AI-powered chatbot, which helps you to understand what sort of closers really fit for the mood or the topic. You have a wedding in Santorini, and then you can ask, what would be appropriate clothes to buy for my wedding in Santorini, right? So that's just one example, but obviously these AI-powered chatbots, is the kind of primary use case, because that's actually quite mature now already, and a lot of companies are experimenting to build those. Then moving onwards, beyond the bots, it could be, let's say, especially in telcos, like interactive voice systems like IVRs. So it's like when you call them, like you have this robot explaining you press 1, 2, 3. And then this can become an interactive experience, right? Then he understands what you are saying. You might be saying in your own target language, right? And then having a more fluid experience, right? Instead of waiting to press one and for the live agent, maybe that new AI-powered IVR system can handle things on its own. Then there is a lot of things to really help personalize journeys, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe personalize the message you send, personalize the image you send, personalize the way you send it, right? So a lot of customer journeys now is a bit static, and then it can be more towards specific, let's say, customers with generated content for them, right? So that's pretty powerful. And lastly, I think it is about empowering your own employees, right? So it's not a chatbot that is facing external customers and handling the initial first points of contact, especially in e-commerce, but it's more about being able for your own customers to know more about your own policies, about your own data, and empower your agents to be very effective. And it can be ranging from connecting to your knowledge base, ranging to connecting to the client understanding, ranging to connecting, okay, these are the strategies that typically work. Please try X, Y, Z, right? And then you can actually tailor those messages that the agent says why you should like buy this or why it is relevant for you. So I think all of those are really interesting use cases. And those are actually already started to be introduced in 2023, and 2024 is probably, it's going to be booming in those applications.
Mm-hmm. I have a provocative question here.
Okay? Sure.
So when I talk with, let's say, people who are getting inspired by the Gen AI topic, etc., I get a feeling that the expectation for the Gen AI is something like, you know, an expectation for self-driving cars. You know, it's like you think like, okay, I have artificial intelligence. It will drive the car fully and I will only be sitting, you know, back, relaxed and doing nothing. And from customer value management experience, also I get a lot of expectations like that, you know. There is an AI, it will do everything with customer value management, and I will be sitting down relaxed, yes? And now the use cases all you are kind of talking about, they are not about replacing the customer value management. They are talking about making particular job better, fine-tuning messaging, fine-tuning, some journeys, amplifying the know-how of the team with the information provided by the chatbots. So what is your feeling there? Do you believe kind of more in those many narrow use cases, or you think more about the vision when, you know, AI will come and take over everything, you know?
Yeah, it's an interesting philosophical question. So I think we would need to separate into different tracks. We started to talk a bit in the opening about general AI. So this is not like generative AI. So generative AI is like a subset of being able to really produce certain things like texts, tailored recommendations, etc. However, when you're talking general AI, it's already matches or exceeds the human capabilities. And then from there, it's anybody's guess. I think in general, this topic is widely discussed, right? Among the best in the AI and AI community. And I think some Altmans, some of the comments summarize it best. It's like, while it seems that a lot of positives can be unlocked, he's not certain that it won't really go into the way where it's like fully autonomous, a lot of the things. However, where we are now, I think it is slightly about more isolated cases, and within those cases, whether it's really good or not. And this also reminded me the difference between AI and a human being, right? I think when it comes to languages, when it comes to serving the customers through the interactions, I think currently the best is what we can do is like replicate what the best humans are doing, right? If you go to your favorite coffee shop and he already knows you, so he offers you the right things, the right coffee, the right snacks, etc. So that experience is something that's impossible to replicate. But the problem is that like at scale, this does not happen because this personalization can happen only in smaller, let's say, communities, right? And then the Gen AI promises maybe it's possible to really understand the customers better and to make those personalized experience through that. So I think currently it's more about reaching that level than anything else. When we are talking about languages and creativity, when we're talking about, let's say, closed systems that we're talking about, StarCraft, chess, etc., there, the difference between AI and humans is surreal. I think Garry Kasparov mentioned, so he was the guy who was behind playing Deep Blue. He's like, okay, it's like similar to comparing like a Ferrari or Tesla with Usain Bolt running. So it's like AI is just like miles away. And I'm thinking when we will have a similar breakthrough in terms of human interactions, and when we are thinking, okay, this is like so wild apart, right? The comprehension of humans in customer value management is so tiny in comparison to this great AI that we already reached that point, right? So I think that's not going to happen in, let's say, this year. But as things are progressing, I think it's anyone's guess. And if it reaches more like this closer to general AI, right, I think it would be able to do more things more better. But yeah, we'll still need to get there.
Yeah, okay, so I think this is a really kind of important note, because when we don't know fully how to adopt this really great technology, and everybody are exploring, at the same time we need to be kind of realistic and focused where we can reap the most benefits really fast, because kind of when we do adoption now, we are very far ahead, even if we do some kind of, if we increase our, let's say, team's capabilities 10x today, we are way ahead of the competition, you know, instead of waiting until, you know, the full AI will take over all the customer value management, etc. Yeah,
true. And maybe just to build on this, I'm thinking like it's similar technology shift that has already happened, right? So some of the technology introductions have been huge, right? So something like introduction of internet applications, web, right? And the idea that e-commerce would supplant a lot of purchasing, right? And it has actually happened, right? A lot of purchases have went to web. Your website experience and ability to buy through an apps has transformed, right? A lot of business, like when we're talking billion worth businesses, are built on apps that take advantage of the technology that's currently available, right? So companies that failed to do that became irrelevant, right? So it's similar. So Gen AI is probably like an emerging technology that gives certain capabilities to gain, let's say, competitive advantage against the competition. However, to really adopt that, even now, you need like fundamentals in place. You need the data, you need the governance of the data, you need the processes. It won't magically happen, right?
Yeah.
So maybe for somebody it will, but like to really bring that to companies, then a lot of things need to happen for even POCs to work well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you touched an interesting topic. So what would be your, let's say, checklist to understand whether we as a company are prepared to start leveraging, let's say, Gen AI?
True. So, yeah, let's take, let's say, companies typically comprise of, let's say, different business units. And for them, they need to have the right interactions in place to be really taking advantage of let's say, AI, right? Let's say, key thing is that, let's say, those large language models, those are built outside of your company. Most likely, they don't even know your company exists, right? Unless it's mentioned in something Reddit or like Wikipedia, etc. But still, it's going to be limited information because you are walling, let's say firewalls, different security systems, your information from company's perspective, your client's data, your data, the knowledge base you have, the processes, the tacit learning that you have with each of your employees, right? So language model has zero idea about that, right? So in order to be able to really to teach the model, so it's ever fine, like you ever fine tune it, so which changing the weights of the model itself, or you need to do something like retrieval augmented generation, RAG, right? So like it connects to your systems. And it's not magic, right? I mean, it still kind of translates the information into tokens and builds this understanding, right? So you need to have specific data architectures and in places to be really able to incorporate that in the language models, right? And unless that's in place, nothing's going to happen, right?
So you still need to check if you basically have the know-how encoded into text so that you could actually use it, yeah?
Right. So, you definitely need some sort of data or the knowledge based on which LLMs can be extended and trained. It needs to follow a certain format and data architecture so that the AIs can actually get that. You need to have the necessary infrastructure to be able to incorporate that, because if you build something that's unique, like that's going to be hosted somewhere, you need alignment between your data teams, your analytics teams, and your business teams that you are incorporating and focusing on the right use cases, right?
So maybe from, let's see, even from the data perspective, yeah, or to make a touch base. So usually when you work with telco, you have a data warehouse where it's super structured data. And now when we talk about LLMs, we start talking about files. It's something totally different. It's like documents, text documents, etc., which is absolutely different nature from what you usually work with, where you have the governance, etc. Yeah, am I correct?
This is true. So in general, like taking advantage of the structured data, you can do it now, right? Like all the advanced analytics techniques, those exist, right? If you already are able to mark the customer for one or the other action, and you have, let's say, his behavioral or usage information, then you can make quite substantial predictions. And like any person who has used, let's say, Netflix or Amazon, see how those prediction engines work. So recommendation for next movie or recommendations to buy a certain thing. Those are spot on, right? Mm-hmm. But those are using more like some of the structured data, right? However, in terms of extensions for language models, right? So what you wanted, so we talked about, you want, let's say, to do a questions and answers on your Confluence knowledge database, right? So that and then one of the use cases could be onboarding a new person, right? So that he gets the right information at the right way by asking the questions instead of trying to figure out which of the versions is correct and then trying to read it and then understanding it, right? So like this experience could be reshaped in him just querying or asking the questions directly to this let's say Q&A bot about your knowledge base. However, to be able to have a quality of your outputs, right, you need to really shape your knowledge base in a way that's easy for the AI to understand. If you have different versions, right, he will not be, he's not like a PhD, he will not be able to distinguish which of the versions is the correct one. He will not have the right context because he will not have spoken, right? And the memory of AI is still limited. We're talking about thousands of tokens, right? But it's not that he understands all of those things, right? So to truly enable AI-based systems in your company, you need to tailor your knowledge base in a way that it's easier for him or it to understand, right? So you are very correct in terms of either files or you don't even need in the files, it can be like knowledge-based systems, right? Do you have the data labeled correctly? Maybe to have the data written correctly, right, without conflicting information, so that it will then can read and incorporate in their answers. Mm.
So it seems like a lot of new type of data engineering and quality measures are coming into place. Are there any other, so when we have the data, are there any other kind of milestones that we need to have achieved before we start leveraging that?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, maybe let's say the company should experiment. Well, ideally, they have some sort of AI strategy in place how to approach that, because even introduction of really, when introducing at scale, then it's a technology that needs to be governed and really checked that things are working, right? So if you let it speak with your clients, maybe you need to really test it quite thoroughly. Obviously, we would recommend companies to start with the AI strategy first, just to really validate their expectations, budgets, and how they approach this topic. Then data is the, let's say, key prerequisite to be able, if you have way too specific, let's say, data sets or the knowledge. So that's very interesting. However, that's probably like an area to really build a custom LLM or fine tuning to your data sets and maybe like to read like graphs, like electrical graphs or any other, right? So that's a specific knowledge that needs still be to train, right? So some of the current LLMs are not necessarily trained for your industry-specific problematic, right? So then it needs to be cross-checked whether it's feasible, the match between a given foundational model and what you want to bring as a use case. And one of the action points is probably approvals for POCs, right? So I think it's important then to experiment for a given area to really cross-check those items, right? So a given foundational model choice, a given framework choice with the data set to check whether it gives and can be scaled the right, let's say, AI bot experience, right? And then you can look to integrate that in your end-to-end. If those milestones is reached, then you basically move to integration and then to scaling.
I think regarding the governance part, it's really interesting new aspects coming up, yeah? Because like if you were using, let's say, predictive algorithms to guess which customers will churn or not, the biggest mistake what you can do is like, you know, you assign a bad score and you give the wrong offer to the customer. Now, if you rush to, let's say, expose a chatbot, which uses a large language model behind, you are exposed to really strange things. Like if you use OpenAI's ChatGPT, yeah, then probably you don't need to worry about the bad language, etc. It basically comes out of the box because OpenAI works to make sure that, you know, there wouldn't be any bad language used, etc. Now, if you use open source tools, suddenly you are responsible for that on your own because, like, you need to fine tune it, you need to do check that the prompts that users are kind of generating, they do not generate something which could put bad things for your brand, yeah? So this is a very interesting topic where kind of previously we didn't have this governance aspect at all from the company's perspective.
Yeah, so we probably had governance, a lot of governance aspects, but not specifically for large language models, right? So if you had a chatbot, it could produce limited set of information and it was more like linear experience. And if you have humans, you obviously have governance that they how they need to interact with your customers. And you have policies, you have trainings, etc. So it's very similar introducing these AI tools, right? It's like welcoming colleagues and then exposing them to knowledge of your company in order to for it to be effective, right? So there are some use cases that don't require, let's say, company proprietary information. However, if you really want to make it a unique experience for the customer, it needs to know about your company very well, and it needs to know about that customer as well. Otherwise, it's just something very generic, even if very capable. And like this governance aspect, I think it leads to this discussions about open source versus non-open source, right? So as you correctly mentioned, all the GPTs, right, are proprietary to OpenAI. So there is probably some risks and limitations that, like if they change the pricing, some of the models that have been previously used, it's gonna be either totally unfeasible or the opposite, very profitable, and sometimes even like destroys the industries about, let's say you build an app and they create a new functionality that replaces this app, right? So let's say voice is a good example. Like you don't need to build yourself text to voice because they build it like really well and they build it way better, right? So in terms of using this open source versus proprietary, I think it will be always this choice. And one of the aspects that you are mentioning in terms of the governance that, yes, that you will need to test and rely more. And the complexity of really fine-tuning will increase. So it will lead more like crypto companies to really look into this buy or build options, right? To rely on maybe third parties to help to bring certain AI innovations to their unique set of circumstances. And part of it is because of these governance concerns.
Okay, so before wrapping up our discussion, I have the final question related to the AI topic. So what are you inspired the most about the future or the nearest future, I would say?
Yeah. So I think this year we're going to see a lot of more like deployments, right? So previously, a lot of things have happened in isolated cases. So what we are talking about, let's say ChatGPTs, right? We're going to talk about, let's say, GPT-powered apps in different applications, similar to Duolingo or Conmigo, but in other setups, right? So I'm looking forward how the companies will change my experience, especially online, in terms of those interactions. What I'm really looking for is, let's say, to create this a digital assistant, so like upgraded versions of the Siri, of the Google Assistant, that would be able to serve as a true assistant and as an agent to really find the best deals, book things, etc. So a lot of the things that I'm still currently doing while I'm empowered by certain AI tools, it does not close the system, right? Because there are different action points that need to be taken, right? And I think this is like the next step that will happen. So innovations there is really exciting. And lastly, I think while we're talking about the GPT-4 as being an amazing engine, right? A foundational model. It has been introduced like a year ago, right? It has a certain version improvements. However, I'm looking forward to see how the big tech giants, Meta, Google, and OpenAI have introduced their new foundational models or versions of them and how that takes up. We will need to see whether it's like, you know, linear increase or it actually keeps on having these really huge innovation leaps.
Mm. Okay, so let's wait and see. On which giant would you bet?
So far it seemed that OpenAI is so far ahead. Basically, it's like the standard. All of the measurement reports, those are measuring against the performance of GPTs. And the biggest brag that Mistral or Google makes is like, oh, look, it beats the GPT, and our like ultra model beats like GPT 4.0, right? So it seems that, and it's reflected in the valuation as well, that OpenAI is the company to follow and maybe to incorporate certain their developments into either your own workflows or the way you use that in your business.
Okay. So let's see. We'll bet some money there. And let's go into the last part. So last three questions. So okay. We always ask our participants three things. Thing okay. Number one is, what are you most proud of? From the career perspective, what is your proudest moment there? I know it's always a tough question.
It's a tough question. there are so many points. I'm not sure if like this in particular proudest or not. But I always think about the journey which I started with Exacaster. In the first month, I had like to go visit our clients in order to take over, let's say, our operations in the region. So visited Miami, but the next visit was visiting Latin America and El Salvador. I was like trying to figure out, okay, El Salvador, how they're doing. Okay, sounds very interesting. And then to go there and you meet like ton of people, like there are 30 people like coming in, like different faces, different things, everybody's speaking Spanish, and you're trying to both really onboard yourself in the company and at the same time to figure out the client context, right? Actually, it was a success case in the end of the day, but it was such a very interesting and dynamic experience. Later on, as you gain more knowledge about the company, about the client, etc., it has been easier to navigate those things, but it was very pushed, like a lot of the limits where you are really intensively learning. And whenever I'm really intensively learning, those are experiences that resonate with me the most. Be that on site with the customers, or be that exploring the possibilities with the Gen AI.
Okay. I see that you also were very inspired by the Latin America. It's like quite a big difference from the cultural perspective when you move from Lithuania to Latam, yeah?
Yeah, it's definitely something. Like, you need to have a certain frame of mind to be effective, so I think both like this adjustment and being open to experience, right? Because something like adopting new technologies is being open to experience, right? So let's see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. The next question is, what was your biggest failure that you can now laugh at? You know, it's like from the perspective.
I actually try not to dwell so much on the failures per se. I have more of the philosophy that whatever happens, happens. And then you need to reflect on the thing as much as like possible to incorporate that in the future learnings. But it's not in my like hard drive. So mm-hmm. It's not like immediately I respond to this because, okay, like this is something that has happened. I learned this lesson and then incorporated. So that's like a philosophy. So it's similar to, let's say, GPTs where you kind of drop the memory of the previous learning and just pass along the instructions that are really relevant for the task without dwelling so much on the failure mm-hmm. itself.
Okay. And what would you recommend for our listeners, a book, a podcast, or whatever resource that could help them grow either professionally or kind of personally? What would be your top recommendation?
So I take a view that in order to really understand the topic, you need to have this multi-touch point approach where it is ability to understand the problem from different angles. We talked a lot about, let's say, AI, Gen AI, etc. So I think it is so let's focus maybe on this subset where it's relevant information. I think it's first following the leaders, so OpenAI or Meta, etc. So following what they're doing on the blogs in terms of their releases, podcasts, etc. Then in terms of podcasts, like something like Lex Friedman or Joe Rogan, especially Lex, like he himself is from that area, and then he interviews a lot of like the top minds of AI and how to bring those innovations, right? So I think it's getting firsthand listening to them and the reasonings they do, because there is, as you mentioned before, there's a lot of hype, but those guys know what are, like, let's say, true limitations. So those podcasts are very interesting. I think books are often too slow to really provide information about the latest, right? So it's either blog posts or Reddit and different subreddits there where it's a wealth of information about applications of AI. So I think those are the subsets that I would read. And then others are more like for my personal growth.
Okay, cool. So thank you, Rokas, for a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, so thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to CVM Stories. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review. You can also ask us a question about a particular customer value management challenge you have at work. We will happily ask our experts to tackle your challenge in a future episode.